All right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Ramiel Nagel about curing tooth decay, about his book with the same title. And it's really interesting, a lot of stuff to discuss here, and we're going to carry on and talk more about this. I wanted to begin to talk about sugar as well, actually, if we can, refined sugar, and what happens in, you know, with the teeth when we eat a lot of this. As we know, and as you know, Ramiel, there's any kind of processed food, the majority of foods right now has refined, some kind of refined sugar in them, or it's corn syrup or whatever it is. It's tons of different kind of sweetener things. And that, to me, almost seems like the sugar conspiracy, right? There's sugar in every single food almost. How does this affect our teeth? And maybe, I think it was you who talked a little bit about the history actually of sugar, why it was developed the way it was when it comes to being refined and such, that it, I guess what I'm getting at is it shouldn't have the effect on our teeth that it actually has. Am I missing the point there, or is there something to that, Ramiel?
Well, no, I don't think you're missing the point. I think the reason why sugar is in food so much is, again, because of our industrial food system. So the goal of a food company that makes a product is to sell lots of whatever they're selling. And the way to make it taste good is with sugar. And sugar also acts as a preservative. But it's important to differentiate there's white sugar, which I guess is mostly made from sugar beets. And then there's all kinds of different sweeteners that are more refined, that have different names, such as the main one of concern is high fructose corn syrup.
That's right. Yeah.
And in Sweden, they have food with that.
Oh,
they
sure.
They allow that.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course they do.
So
no, the government protects us and we're all safe. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, the government does protect us a little bit, but not much.
Let me tell you.
So the high fructose corn syrup, that's the worst sweetener, or one of the worst ones. And the thing that they don't tell you is that there's a complicated industrial process to convert the corn or the corn pulp, whatever they're using, into the sweetener. And what happens is you get a sweetener that's not really recognized or usable by the body. And it just causes all kinds of body chemistry chaos. Even a natural sugar, or the less refined the sweetener, the less harmful effects it has on the body. For example, in India, jaggery, which is a kind of unrefined cane sugar, is considered medicinal. But what happens to the majority of us is we consume too much sugar because it tastes good. It kind of gives a relaxation to the mind in a certain way. It dulls your pain sensations, the pain of life or physical pain or whatever. It gives you a temporary euphoria. And what happens is if you eat too much sugar, your body chemistry, your metabolism starts to malfunction. And the way it malfunctions is that when you eat sugar, or even maybe not malfunction, but what happens is when you eat sugar, the body needs the minerals, uses the minerals, calcium and phosphorus, particularly calcium, to neutralize the sugar in your blood. And the more you eat sugar, the more calcium storage that you're using. And after you consistently lose enough of your calcium storage, then you're going to get bone loss somewhere in your body. And for many people, the bone loss shows up in the teeth, and that's tooth decay. If you get bone loss in your jaw, then that's gum disease.
Hmm.
So does that
definitely that definitely explains it? It's basically due to the way the body processes the sugar. It depletes the body from calcium. It depletes it ultimately then from the nourishment, and that's the reason why we're malnourished. Wrong food is like, you know, you're depleting yourself, and that this could lead to other things eventually down the road as well, I guess, like osteoporosis and stuff like that, correct?
Yes, and diabetes used to be called sugar diabetes, because they knew that if you ate, and I'm not sure this is the exact number, 60 pounds of sugar per year, that you would get this disease of an imbalance with your insulin. And also, when I talk about this blood sugar stuff, I'm not just making this up. This is from the life research of a dentist by the name of Melvin Page, who was very interested in the body chemistry of people and found that if he could stabilize their blood sugar, just doing that was enough to cure most people's cavities.
Hmm. Wow. Is there any good sugar or version of sugar that can be used?
Yes and no. There is no sugar that you can eat that doesn't have a consequence on the body. And if any sugar is advertised that it's good for you or safe sugar or doesn't sugar without calories or whatever, that's the most dangerous food there is. It's a manufactured food. Sugars that are safe to eat, I only have a small list, are sugars that have been around for hundreds or thousands of years that were pre-industrial. And that is maple syrup, unrefined maple syrup, honey, but it has to be raw honey from wild bees. A lot of honey, if you just go to the store and buy honey, it's not real honey. They feed the bees a supplement of fructose, and the bee just kind of creates some substance from it, which they call honey.
Yeah.
and it hurts your teeth when you eat that, but it's not real honey. And most honeys in the store, even in the natural store, are not real honeys. The bees have had some supplement. Not all, but most.
Wow.
Real cane sugar. So if you have a cane sugar that's not refined and there's some brand names of companies in the U.S. that have a less refined cane sugar. One's called Rapadura, one's called Heavenly Sugar. Or if you had a sugar like jaggery, like it's like a cube, it's like a cake of sugar. That's about it. There's some people. So stevia is natural if you have the green whole herb, but if you extract it, then it's a fake sugar, really.
Yeah.
And the reason why they extract it is because the whole herb, it's not good for cooking with. It's not that good for sweetening. It doesn't mix well with stuff. So then they extract it so that it makes it easier to use. Anything not on that list, you should probably not eat.
Obviously, we know about NutraSweet, Splenda, aspartame, these incredibly toxic chemicals that are developed as natural, you know, not natural sweeteners, but, you know, artificial sweeteners to kind of, you know, what that you should put into your coffee or whatever, you know, or cook with it. That's really bad. I know that. Have you ever heard about erythritol?
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well, anything that ends in T-O-L is a sugar alcohol. And how is sugar and sugar alcohol is different? I mean, I don't know. I'm not a chemist, but it's not a real sugar. And any not real sugar has, I don't know if I have an article specifically on this on my website, but any not real sugar, if there's scientific studies done, it'll show that it has some negative side effects. So that's one of them. There are some studies that show it's got this or that side effect. We're not supposed to be eating these foods. The only reason why someone thinks we should even be eating this is because someone thought they can make money selling this. No one's trying to save people's lives or make people healthy with these products. It's just a way for someone to make money. If we were just interested in people being healthy, then the only sweeteners would be from whole foods and would be minimally processed.
Yeah. And it's addictive as well, the sugar. Hence, many companies put it in their food because people, you know, come back for that. They, as you said, they come back for the high, literally.
Yeah, and then also if you eat a lot of sugar, then your taste buds get altered, and then they kind of get dulled and filled up, and then you need to have more sugar to make food taste good, and then it's a negative cycle.
Well, you know what? That's a really good point. I've been doing this, avoiding, you know, as many sugars as possible for some time. And then you go back, let's say you try something that actually has, you know, sugar in it, or it's supposed to be like a candy or something like that. And it's, it's so incredibly sweet. It's like it's overkill, if you know what I mean. It's incredible. But what that means is basically people who are having it are getting desensitized from it all the time because they're eating it, they're getting it, so they need more and more. Kind of like how some people are with salt. Basically, you get you get accustomed to it. Basically, good point.
Yeah, and my daughter, since she hasn't, we don't give her too much. We give her some fruit, but she doesn't get any processed sugar. And her taste buds are so good that if she even has something or even smells something that's been processed, she just smells chemicals. She can't. Yeah. She can smell and taste that it's not a real food.
Wow. Yeah, pretty interesting stuff. We have a lot of other things with dentistry overall that's very toxic. Of course, the way they heal they don't heal the teeth. Let me be correct in my words that I use here. They plug up the teeth with different things. They drill a hole. They basically kill the tooth. And that I've heard as well is actually really that could be worse in some cases. It can actually lead to more problems. Tell us about that.
So what a dentist does is a dentist drills a hole in the tooth to prevent bacteria from making holes in your teeth. The idea of putting something in people's teeth makes sense when you think about how dentistry started. Imagine someone has a very large hole in their tooth. They're in a lot of pain. You'll want to put some material in there to make that person out of pain so they can chew and feel good again. That's the origin of dentistry, to get people out of pain. But today, it's not so much about that. It's about treating stuff preventatively, drilling stuff preventatively, and doing stuff that's unnecessary mostly. Now, mercury was the common material used, and the reason why it was used is because it was cheap. Not necessarily because it's the best material, but it's affordable.
Jeez.
Because in the U.S. there was a society, dental society, that banned mercury, and they got disbanded because the people couldn't afford or didn't want to pay for expensive fillings.
Yeah.
So most of the dentistry today is still a little bit stuck in the mercury filling paradigm. And the mercury filling paradigm says you have to drill big holes. You have to angle the hole so it kind of looks like a trapezoid. So you make the deeper part of the hole wider so that the filling retains in the tooth. And then we all know mercury, I think it's in the top 10 most toxic substances, toxic mineral, or I guess mineral is the right word.
Heavy metal or whatever.
Yeah. Heavy metal. Yeah. One of the most toxic substances on our planet, mercury.
Yeah.
And we put it in people's mouths. And it's more than that is considered safe to use. It's considered industrial waste in the United States, the amount of mercury just in one filling. It's toxic waste, hazardous toxic waste. It has to be disposed of in a special way, the amount we put in one person's tooth. And it's poisonous. It poisons the person. And mercury, because of the how it's liquid at room temperature, it's really nasty what it does to the body. Even small amounts can do all kinds of things to mess up the metabolism and digestion and just all kinds of health problems in our society are likely contributed or even caused by mercury poisoning. So that's the worst of it. So dentistry has been putting poison in people's teeth, and it's so profound that nobody wants to own up to it, really. No industry, no government has yet to own up to the disaster of mercury fillings.
Yeah.
Beyond that, there's composites. And of course, there's many composites have all kinds of chemicals, and it's just glue and resin that's designed to bond quickly to the tooth and be functional. It's not stuff that's designed to be healthy to the body, although there are some composites that are better, but they're more expensive or they're more time-consuming to place. And for whatever the reason, most dentists don't use these higher quality or more inert composites. So many composite fillings still have metals in them. And it has all kinds of different chemicals. So it's a big toxic mess of what a majority of dentists are doing. Now, there's a holistic dentist who are supposed to use materials that are safer, but that doesn't mean that they don't drill in lots of holes in people's teeth.
Yeah. Is there ever a scenario where that's the only way out? Or let's say how bad does it have to be for someone to, I guess the pain, of course, would be one of the reasons why they want to, get a root canal or something like that. But I guess what I'm asking is, how quickly can this be turned around by eating right, do you think, if there's a pressing issue?
Well, first of all, the problem that people need to know about is the teeth that have had fillings, particularly mercury fillings, become traumatized teeth. And those teeth are usually the teeth that require a crown or a root canal. If there wasn't mercury filling placed in the tooth to begin with, then the idea of a crown or root canal, even from a conventional dentistry perspective, that those treatments are largely unnecessary. So how quickly it can be turned around depends on what tooth we're talking about.
Sure. Yeah.
If someone has a crown tooth that's kind of been bothering them a little bit for years and years, it's just been going mediocre, that tooth probably is going to need a dental treatment no matter what you eat, because it could be just rotten goop under the crown, just like this rotting dead material. Any tooth material that's so soft that you can just scrape it away cannot remineralize. It's just dead. Anything that's still hard can remineralize and get harder. Now, which makes me wonder why dentists don't just use scrapers and why they need drills at all. I don't even know. And I asked some dentists, why do you drill teeth? And I couldn't even give you a good answer. They couldn't give me a good answer on why they drill teeth, other than that if there's this one kind of crater cavity, then you need to drill. But that's not a common kind of cavity where there's like a tiny hole and then in the tooth it's all filled with gunk and just mush. Mm-hmm. But other than that, they couldn't even give me a reason on why to drill. So, but probably any dentist listening to this is jumping in their seats right now when I'm saying this. just to scrape out, use a hand tool and scrape out is all the decay that needs to be removed. So yes, sometimes you do need a dental treatment. It's case by case. It depends how much change the person is doing in their diet. It depends how bad or damaged the tooth is from previous dental treatments. But as a general rule, if the tooth hasn't had a dental treatment, you can probably save it from a dental treatment. You could remineralize it. And if there's a large hole and it remineralizes, then you could put a buildup composite. There's some occasional dentists who are honest. If they feel there's no cavity, but there's a big hole, but the cavity is hard, you can put a composite right on top of the tooth. So the dentist could actually make the tooth better by just bonding on a biocompatible material after the body chemistry has been balanced. That's the ideal scenario of what dentistry could be. It could be helpful to people.
Yeah. I saw some of your previous videos and all that, and it's like, if things are bad enough, eating like raw liver, other organs, bone marrow, and of course, as you've been saying already, fermented cod liver oil, if one to do that, that's something you could literally see results with, in a few days, right? If one would do that.
Yeah, you're thinking of if you have an infection. So yeah, I have sort of emergency guidelines, and even just in my regular suggestion for people is to have some liver, some grass-fed, humanely raised animal liver once or twice a week, like a beef liver or chicken liver.
Raw or cooked?
Cooked.
Yeah.
However, if you had raw beef liver, I wouldn't recommend chicken liver raw, but you can have raw beef liver. It's more medicinal. Eating the raw stuff is medicinal.
Yeah.
So if you wanted that extra medicine or were very desperate, which some people are, then having that raw. Also, having some raw meat like a steak tartare, I guess in, you know, like in France, they eat the the rare. That is very easy for the body to digest, and it's a really good food if you have an infection or want some quicker healing results. It just helps the body get stronger faster.
I wanted to bring up as well, by the way, because I was, it came to me as we were talking about this. Mercury also actually is kind of, there's vapor from mercury. It's kind of degassing in your teeth or in your mouth, basically, when you have some of these fillings as well. So depending on how many you have, but I think there's even, I saw this a while back, so, you know, they filmed this with some kind of, I think it's ultraviolet or some kind of filter they put on. And they, I think they heated, put a little bit of hot tooth or hot water or something on the tooth, and you can literally see it like degassing. Have you, did you ever see that video, Ramiel?
Yeah, I think if you look on YouTube, smoking tooth, that you'll see that. And yeah, it's been they've been able to measure how much vapor comes off the tooth. So if you have mercury fillings, every time you brush, you're increasing it already releases a certain amount of vapor per day. But then if you brush, it releases much more vapor. If you drink a hot liquid, then it releases more vapor. If you chew, it releases more vapor. So people who have mercury fillings are being poisoned.
So getting these out is essential.
At some point, you need to get them out. The tricky part is to do it correctly. And because I've had a lot of people email me, and after they get their mercury filling removed, they say, well, my tooth never bothered me before with the mercury filling, and now it hurts all the time. And it has to do with the technique of the dentist. The dentist really needs to take a lot to be really careful when they remove the mercury, in addition to the safety procedures of a vacuum for the vapors and a rubber dam for the particles. The dentist should drill really carefully and not drill into the tooth, but just drill out the mercury filling. And then the composite has to be bonded slowly on there so that it doesn't, with the right kind of bonding, it has to be bonded kind of wet so that when the filling glue dries, it doesn't contract and cause the nerve in the tooth to get irritated. There's all these details.
Wow.
And unfortunately, only the best holistic dentists I've talked to even care or are aware or are concerned enough to treat people in that way. Like they take their profession as an art form. And if you go to a dentist like that, then you get your mercury filling removed and you'll feel great. But there's lots of other things that could happen too. So I just tell people to be careful. But yes, it's and also you want to take cilantro before and take sea minerals. There's a lot of different things you could do before, a lot of vitamin C to help with them, because some mercury is going to be released after you get the fillings removed.
Huh. Why cilantro, by the way?
Well, cilantro is known for heavy metal chelation.
Ah.
And I do a juice, so I have a juicer, Green Star juicer, and I make juice with cilantro and parsley, cucumbers, and zucchini. And that juice is, I drink every day some vegetable juice, and it's really medicinal, helps the body get into balance.
I've done cilantro too in the juice. Tastes really good, actually. Very good, fresh cilantro in there. It's great. Now, a holistic dentist, then basically, it's very difficult for you to say, of course, depending on where people are and everything else, but any other tips on how to find the right dentist to talk with them, I guess, and try to figure out what they know and that they realize all these things?
Well, the way you know if your dentist is good is when you leave that you feel good.
But if people don't want to risk that of having the trouble feeling bad when they come out.
If you're not sure, then I usually suggest you get a consultation. So you be very clear up front that you're not coming in for a treatment, that you're just coming in for an evaluation, and see how the evaluation makes you feel. But honestly, there's so few good dentists that usually you know who they are from very far away. You could ask around in your network who's good. One thing, and also what a good dentist is varies, because some dentists, maybe it's a conventional dentist, but maybe that dentist is very good at being conservative and diagnosing the problem and taking a conservative approach.
Sure.
because there maybe a holistic dentist uses all the right materials, but is very aggressive in their approach, and they want to do stuff to everybody, even people who don't have problems. So it's complicated. It's not easy. The best holistic dentists, they have a small list of filling materials that they use. In my next book, when I update my book, I'm going to publish the list of materials that the best holistic dentists are using right now. But they just have a small list of materials. So you can say, are you using biocompatible materials? Okay, what are they? Do you test patients? How do you test the patient before the treatment for their material? Do you advise the patient get tested? You could ask the dentist if they had any cranial sacral training. So with the cranial sacral work, the dentist could feel how their treatments are affecting people, and they could, and they also moves into a more therapeutic world of a dentist being a healer. When they do cranial sacral work, they can make it feel good.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. Again, as you said, it's a holistic approach. It's just not compartmentalized the tooth. It's a lot of things that, you know, hinge on this, basically.
Yeah, and the main thing that, to me, what defines a holistic dentist is how conservative they are. If they really want to keep your tooth and do the least surgery possible and give you other suggestions and treatments to help you keep your tooth that are non-surgical and non-chemical, that's a holistic dentist. And if you find a dentist like that, then you're lucky. I personally, to get my mercury removed, I flew to another state. And I advise people, if you can't find a dentist that you like and you need a treatment, not just to you know, get a cleaning or checkup, if you really need work done, don't be afraid to travel far away, because the really good dentists are very few. And it really makes a difference, because they're changing your physiology. They're operating on you.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And also this idea then that the body is as a whole, it works as a unit. It's just not the one thing that you do that is causing decay or whatever. It's the whole deal. You have a section on, I mean, you mentioned this before as well, actually getting hormones from eating certain things, but hormones and tooth decay, the section you have on that, you know, this is part of like the pituitary gland, the thyroid gland, sex glands, and basically it's important to balance all of this to be able to heal. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, I mentioned it because I wanted to explain there was some rationale behind eating the glands of the animals. And that rationale is that the function of our body chemistry, which is our metabolism and how we use food, is connected to our hormonal system. And if we eat some organs and glands from animals, that gives our hormonal system a boost. And our hormonal system is connected to tooth decay. So for example, it's well known that our thyroid gland is connected to calcium metabolism, and it's also connected to tooth decay.
Yeah. Interesting how that works. How about if the body depletes, or even like if it's getting rid of toxins, a lot of calcium is being depleted on that basically, and on top of the vitamin C is also important to that. But again, as a measure, let's say, of someone who doesn't want to eat all these things, is there other things they can do? Can they take a good form of calcium or something like that, or again, different supplements that are more natural? Does anything help? I guess that's what I'm getting at.
If someone has cavities, the advice that the only supplement you could take that will make your life easier if you don't want to do anything else is the Green Pastures fermented cod liver oil and butter oil blend, the Blue Ice Royal blend. That's the only thing that's the easy additional supplement, because it gives you the fat soluble vitamins that are missing.
Yeah.
But really, people had to pay attention to what they're eating and make some changes. So, when you're asking about supplement, I just say, how about some yogurt? And, in Sweden, you don't have unpasteurized yogurt, but maybe you could find some really good quality yogurt that's been low temperature pasteurized, and that's okay, because that's what's available.
Yeah. It's weird in terms of the fact that we have stopped, you know, again, going back to that idea that we've stopped with the natural things that we had for the longest of time, and it's changed so radically, so quickly. And I think another consequence of this, Ramiel, is that people are, they're getting sick in many different ways. I mean, again, just connecting nutrition and cancer is like a revolutionary idea, you know, like it has something to do with each other. It's actually could be, because let's face it, there's a lot of people out there that are sick, you know, and I don't understand still to this day why, again, I know a lot of doctors do this, holistic doctors and people are read up on it, but in the regular official medical field, it's like, it's hardly even touched upon. It's incredible to me.
Yeah, it is incredible. Absolutely.
Why do you think it is? Why haven't they made the connection yet?
Well, part of it is the school system. So the individual, by the time someone's a doctor, for example, they've gone through so much schooling and have been told a certain way, this is how it is. So the Western school system is based on obedience and authority. In other words, the hidden lesson of school, it's not reading or math. It's that the authority, the teacher, or the textbook knows what's right, and that you, the student or individual, don't. So by the time someone's been through so much school as a doctor, many people aren't questioning what they're doing, nor are people who watch television and just sort of do what everyone else is doing questioning the causes and effects. They're not looking at it. And the reason why is because it's painful. It's painful when you go to the doctor and they give you medicine and they say, this medicine will help your problem, and it makes you sick. And it's painful for the doctor to look at the fact that all the medicine or most of the medicine he's prescribing to people is making people sick. And the same is with dentists. Most dentists who are holistic dentists, the only reason why they're holistic dentists is because they were mercury poisoned. So their body stops working properly. They get all these weird problems. They don't know what it is. Eventually, somehow, they figure out it's mercury poisoning. It takes that extreme level of harm to the body for the dentist to wake up and go, oh my gosh,
yeah,
something's wrong. So the regular dentists aren't looking at the causes and effects of what they're doing. They're not willing to look at it. The government officials not willing to feel and to listen to what's going on. They're not open enough. They're not connected to themselves enough to receive the argument that says, I'm a free person. I should be entitled to consume this substance, which there's a lot of evidence that shows it's healthy.
Yeah.
The government should at least be out of the way.
Exactly.
If not promoting this.
Of course.
Yet somehow that's not possible. Even the dairy industry or the Monsanto or wherever, all these employees and all the people who work for these companies don't care enough to change. Their value system is imbalance, and the reason why their value system is imbalanced is because that's part of the human experience. The world is very flawed, and all of us have our flaws. And on a collective level, these flaws manifest as evil and sickness. And yeah. People need to change and look within themselves and feel whatever feelings they have in order to release the attachments that are creating these kinds of suffering. This is suffering. And I say that people are sick because there's a deeply ingrained belief system that to be human is to be sinful, that your very existence, your very nature as a human, to want to eat meat, to want to procreate, to want to have what you need, that there's something flawed with that, and therefore the body must be punished. And I think a lot of our mainstream systems are based on this idea that somehow we're wrong and bad, and therefore the punishment is the only solution given.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I know we have vegetarians and vegans listening and stuff like that as well, and they would maybe never they couldn't eat like this because they're they have issues with it and it's cruel and everything else. Well, what would you say to them?
Well, for vegetarians and vegans, I would say that I respect your decision for what you're doing, but to really look at, have you been thoughtful about why you're doing it? Have you really considered the arguments of being a vegetarian or vegan? And a common theme of vegetarians and vegans is deprivation. In other words, they got the idea that in order to save the world or make the world better, that they must suffer or deprive themselves. It is martyrdom. So because there's too much killing, we should not kill an animal. But unfortunately, what happens is their bodies suffer. I know not all vegetarians and vegans, though, but a lot of them are in a state of depletion and suffering.
Do you think there's some, due to body type or what have you, actually managed to pull it off?
Yeah, if you grew up eating a lot of good, strong animal foods and milk and meat, and you have a good constitution, you could pull it off for 20, 30, or 40 years, but it'll come back. Someone I know here, they're vegan and they look healthy and he's big and strong, and he has all kinds of kidney problems because of the vegan diet. Steve Jobs died of pancreas cancer, and the president of Apple Computers.
Sure. Oh yeah. Yep.
And he was a vegan and he ate nuts and seeds and fruit and vegetables.
Lots of apples.
And then lots of apples. Yeah. And then the actor who is going to play him, Ashton Kutcher, I just saw this in the news, mm-hmm. to play him for the movie, he was eating the vegan diet to get into his role. And he was so sick, he went to the hospital from pancreas problems.
And that, on top of that, that can also be, because there are multiple levels to that, the body goes through different detox processes as well. So initially, as well as you change your diet, or eat a single food or something like that, it's a plus, of course, to help to detox whatever the body's purging, because you need a way to get that out as well. But on top of that, there might be a kind of a high period. I don't know what else to call it, because you're detoxing. You feel great, and therefore you think it's the only solution and the only option, perhaps to go this way, kind of thing. But what you're saying is that it might not be the best thing in the long run, but it might be something that's beneficial to you temporarily because it helps you to detox, basically.
Absolutely. I think that if someone needs to cleanse their body, then fasting or just drinking vegetable juices or abstaining from meat or animal products or milk and dairy, it could be a great way to cleanse and rejuvenate for certain people,
yeah,
who have the problem of excess, like if your body's too big and swollen. Obviously, if you're really skinny and you do all this stuff, it could be even more harmful. To be careful, and also that it's really hard to be successful in the Western countries because the vegetables aren't nutrient dense enough.
Well, exactly. That's a really good point. And even if we eat organic, let's say, that doesn't necessarily cut it either, right?
Unfortunately, it doesn't, because organic doesn't mean the food is nutrient dense. And in the U.S., the organic standards, you could have organic processed food that's unhealthy for you, but it's made with organic ingredients. So
yeah,
it's about how the food is handled and grown, not just if it's organic, but in general, organic is better than not organic.
How would we, have you thought about this, how we would turn this around? There's a different, types of farming techniques, and I'm spacing in what it's called now. It'll get to me a little bit later here, but a special kind of way, you're permaculture. That's one way of doing it. There's different styles, but this idea, of course, of pouring, you know, phosphorus and whatever else they're doing on the crops is just, or on the soil, it's ridiculous. Have you looked into how to get back and getting like a rich soil again that we can grow our food in that absorbs all of this and keep it that way?
I haven't studied it extensively, but I know that if any farm wants to make a difference, they can. The problem is that the farmers, you know, a lot of them are working really hard but not making a lot of money. So then if you say, okay, you need to make your soil more nutrient dense, the farmer says, hey, I'm working too hard. I'm just trying to get by.
Yeah.
We have all the know-how and technology to rebuild our soils. Definitely, you know, there's a TED Talk. I saw the video about desertification and how you can use herd management and having flocks of animals that are kind of tightly compressed together, like how they would be in the wild. And those herds compact the soil in the ground in a certain way that helps it retain the moisture and grow nicely. So there is the information available about how to manage your farms with farm animals to get more nutrients in. And there's probably a whole bunch of other, you know, there's mushrooms and fungus, and there's all kinds of things you could do. Insects, there's millions of possibilities.
Yeah. I remember a while back hearing this idea that they're always scraping, or, you know, they're plowing up the fields, which is leaving them, you know, barren to the elements, you know, the sun, and then the wind comes and everything else basically means that all that topsoil, once it gets nice and, you know, dry, just blows right off. There was this interesting video, I think it was called Back to Eden, and they had some concept of basically utilizing different, you know, you could do pine needles or even wood chips or even stone. Actually, it was very interesting. He showed how even with stone laying over the actual soil helped it to protect it, like you have skin on your body, basically. And what the farmers is doing is like they're taking off the skin, the natural layer. If you got in the forest or anywhere in nature, nowhere does it scrape clean, you know, so that the soil is exposed like that. It always has a cover on it. And this also, he argued in this video, helped to preserve, you know, and keep the nutrients and everything in the soil. It doesn't just like dry out in the sun and then blow away, you know? So there's tons of different ways.
Yeah, and it probably keeps adding and growing the topsoil left alone. But, you know, people have to want it. They have to be, so much has to change for that to happen, because we're still in the mass production industrial system, which isn't focused really on topsoil. One day they will be, because they'll have no choice. The crops won't grow.
Yeah, it'll be bad enough. Like Idiocracy, they'll be pouring Gatorade on the on the plants or whatever.
No, hey, that might help.
You got electrolytes. You said you were working on another book. What's that, Ramiel?
Oh well, I was meaning the when I revise my book, maybe in a year or two.
An update to this
an
one.
Update.
Have you learned a lot of new things, a lot of new material to add to it?
I don't have enough material to make a new edition yet. What I will want to do is find a local dentist. I'm moving soon, and find a local dentist where I live in the new place, and work with some people and do some really good case studies, and hopefully learn some more specific and detailed methods, and test some of the methods more thoroughly that I recommend, so I can even do much better. And also offer people some good supplements, like the organs and glands and calcium, and just make the high quality food more accessible, so that people can more easily remineralize their body and get more minerals. But one thing it's in my book, but not so clear, but it's going to be in the new book, is that seaweed is really good to help balance your glands and to help your body get into the balance where it will remineralize. And a common, easy to find seaweed is kelp powder. So organic kelp powder, I think most of it comes from Iceland. And if you just take a small amount of that, like a 16th or 8th of a teaspoon per day, and maybe that might be even too much, or it might fluctuate how much you need, it gives your body iodine and trace minerals, and that will help kick things up a little bit and get your body into good function. So eat some seaweed. That's a simple new message. And seaweed is in my book, but I'm going to make it standard.
Okay.
Standard program.
Now, I understand that these are for, you know, measures that needs to be taken because we're so far out of touch with everything. But in terms of like seaweed, let's say, naturally, that's not something that we would eat, right? Because we wouldn't have access to it unless, you know, we perceive of the aquatic monkey theory or something like that, that we were to dive down.
Weston Price found, I think it's in the Andes or it was in, it was an excavation, and they found that people even hundreds of miles from the ocean, and this is hundreds of miles from the ocean, in their little bags of stuff they carried around, they would have some seaweed. So It was common from prehistoric times for people to trade inland. And that might be something where there's genetics play in a role. So if you're from a culture that has been very far from the sea for hundreds and hundreds of, or maybe thousands of years, maybe you don't need as much seaweed. But they would get mineral supplements equivalent from other foods. I saw a video, I think it was in Russia, and the deer, and there's a place where the topsoil is eroded away naturally because of how the rain and the water flows. And so the deer go to the beach and they eat the kelp. And that's their mineral supplement. They just do it intuitively. So a little bit of kelp powder works for most people. And I think a lot of people live by the ocean anyway. And their ancestry has the seaweed in them. So I think for most people, it's a really easy to access and affordable supplement.
Interesting. Well, that's a good point. And it's interesting as well that it looks like the body is very good at adapting if it is through slow and gradual means. And so again, just to reiterate that point, that one of the biggest challenges that we're facing is that things have changed so quickly in our society. I mean, since we talked about it, Second World War, First World War, around that period, that's when really things become drastically different. The whole reformation of society takes place at that point. And everything that's been standard and farming and people, you know, tending their own land, usually providing in that sense for themselves, not moving into big cities. I mean, this is completely new. And so when things change so quickly, we cannot adapt to it. It's impossible. And then that we're doing the wrong thing altogether doesn't help, of course. But what you're getting at is that if there were a slow, transgression towards something or away from something, it might be something that we could deal a little better or worse with, or we could learn how to compensate for that, whatever. But the big drastic changes, that's impossible to deal with.
That's true. Our body is not designed to eat the food of industry, not because it's new necessarily, but because the food wasn't designed for our body to be healthy. The food wasn't thought of in a mindful and compassionate way when it was made or produced.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what's great about the book as well is you have some good tips in there. You have recipes as well, ideas for how to eat certain things, food intake suggestions. And you also have, of course, some things about what foods to avoid. Maybe we can just quickly talk about that before we round things up. Any big things? I mean, obviously sugar and things like that, but any other big things that you would suggest people to avoid to eat altogether?
Yeah, avoid processed sugar. And also sugar could be natural sugar. So if you eat a lot of fruit, just because it's natural doesn't mean it's healthy for you. And if you have tooth decay, you're eating too much fruit or too much sweets.
Yeah.
the big thing to avoid besides that is whole grains. And the reason is that the bran and the germ in general contain a lot of toxins. And so I recommend, that doesn't mean people should eat white flour either. It's just I recommend, it's called an unbleached flour. with rye, I can't remember the term, but it's like a lighter rye where they remove some of the bran and then sour it. And I would recommend people avoid the packaged store-bought gluten-free products made with brown rice, and recommend avoiding the packaged store grain products made with whole grains, because those whole grains are byproduct and the body doesn't really absorb it. And because of the phytic acid and other anti-nutrients in the whole grains, it blocks the absorption of minerals. And the only people who get away with this, because I talked to people who said, oh, I ate whole grains growing up, I didn't have cavities. The only people who can get away with it is those who have a lot of calcium from food in their diet. Mm-hmm. But if they had the calcium and didn't have the whole grain, they'd probably be even healthier.
Yeah. Well, we did a program on wheat as well, the dangers of wheat, and it was specifically in the 70s when they brought in this new dwarf version of the wheat, and it's another, you know, genetic modification basically, and that's really when things started to go downhill. That's what we've seen as well with the, you know, Monsanto and all these other companies, that you might have had something that was at least a little better in the beginning, you know, but then the more it's been, you know, processed and refined for production and you know, what's easy to work with and stuff like that, the worse and the worse and the worse it's gotten. So wheat is another big one for sure. All right. Well, Ramil, why don't we begin to wrap things up for this time? It's been very interesting talking with you, and thank you for sharing some of your knowledge and research with us, of course. And we want to relay people further to the website and ultimately get the book, Cure Tooth Decay. And the website is the same, curetoothdecay.com. And when do you think people can expect an update? In about a year, you said?
1 to 2 years. Yeah, don't wait for the update.
Don't wait for the update. Get it now.
There's not.
Well, if you have tooth decay, you don't want to wait for that. So.
Yeah, there's not going to be a significant. It's not going to be a significant changes. It would just be better and more clear and more focused.
Well, very good. Is there anything else you're working on or anything like that? Other projects in the works?
Projects in the works. Gum disease book. What else? I'm more focusing towards. I'm working on starting a healing and transformation program school, and then I'm more focusing on towards the products than towards the education. So I want to bridge the gap. I don't want to just talk about good food to eat. I want to help people have that good food in their hands. So more focusing on sourcing foods for people. High quality ingredients, testing it, including testing the mineral density of the food, so that people who want the highest quality food can get it, and teaching people traditional ways to prepare grains, which almost nobody knows, and just bringing everyone one step closer to that more ancestral diet where they can be really healthy. Also, I've been studying RBTI, Rheims Biological Theory of Ionization. Have you heard mm-hmm. of that?
No.
It might be interesting to interview a practitioner, RBTI. And I don't know how to integrate it yet into what I'm teaching, but the really simple method the summary of the method is that when our metabolism doesn't function correctly, we don't absorb the most minerals we can from whatever food we eat. So I'm talking to people on the level of just getting more minerals and nutrient density and higher quality foods into your body that your body can use so that you're stronger and healthier. What the RBTI focuses is not so much on that. It focuses on getting your metabolism to get the most food out of whatever you eat.
Yeah.
Right. And and it's scientific too. So it's not guessing. So you measure your urine and saliva for different like pH levels and how much carbohydrate and how much electrical current, the how much salt is in your urine, and you can kind of give a picture of the metabolism function and fluid function of your body, and you can use that picture to do some little tweaks in your diet, usually not something too major, but you can move your metabolism towards the optimal direction. And they find that when people's metabolism gets more to optimal, over time, many of their health problems just go away on their own.
Interesting. Well, I have to check that out. RBTI.
RBTI. Take a look at it, and I'm sure you get a very interesting interview of because they have all kinds of different. It's a very different perspective on things.
All right. Well, that's always good. We do need that. Look at it from different angles. So very good. Well, that's great. Get the book, everybody. Check it out. CureToothDecay.com. Thank you again for your time today, Ramiel. Really appreciate it. Great having you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And we hope you've learned something new, got some new useful tips and new things to consider. We'll return in just a few days with Julia and BJ Davis for a very shocking story of how a border protection agent who the government turned on when she did her job reporting known terrorists entering into the United States is an incredible story with connections far and wide. You shouldn't miss this one. Thank you for listening and for your support. We appreciate every single one of you and for your interest in listening and learning. For Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and myself, we say have a good one, and we will talk to you soon.